All right, everybody, welcome.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, 347-884-8327. And we've got lots of calls and lots of questions, so we're going to jump right into it. If you're on the line and you haven't pressed 1 yet on your phone, if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, press 1. That puts you in the queue. If you've already pressed it, don't press it again. And we've got lots of calls and questions, so let's get right to them. Let's start off in Nebraska tonight. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Merry Christmas to you, by the way.
Merry Christmas. What's on your mind today?
Well, Kevin, I've got a dedicated route. I'm home every night. It's about a 12-hour run. Actually, you can do it in about 11 hours and 40 minutes, just to be exact. And my son is getting interested in doing this. 7 days a week. Naturally, if you can log it legally, of course. But he wants to buy a truck, and I'm thinking, instead of buying a truck, to make a long story short, why don't we just keep one truck and run this thing 24 hours a day?
I think that's a great idea. In fact, there was a time when I was first with FedEx as a contractor in Florida. We had a night dispatch and a morning dispatch. And there was a time when you were able to bid on both with a single truck. So there was a time when I had a truck that ran almost 23 hours out of every day. I mean, it was down for a couple hours, but not very often. And boy, I'll tell you what, that was the most profitable setup I ever had.
Well, that makes me feel good because I've been thinking about this for about a week. My son hasn't got too much experience, but he's actually going to go through a community college part-time to get his, go through the CDL course. It takes about 9 weeks. He'll have all of his endorsements. He'll be insurable right away. And we do haul hazardous materials, but I'm not worried about that because, he's got a pretty good head on his shoulder, so to speak. But this is something I've been really kicking around. It's a family business, and what better way to do it than by paying one truck off and then possibly purchasing another one maybe in a year or so and then having kind of the same results.
Yeah, whether it's by having a team operation or slip seating in this case where you're going to put multiple drivers in the same truck at different times, what you're doing is you're taking advantage of a fixed cost that already exists. All the costs to have that truck sit there already exist. You have to pay, if it's not paid for, you have truck payments, you have insurance, you have permits, you have license. You have all those costs, and the only way to drive those costs down per mile is to get more paid miles. So the more we can use that asset, the more profitable it becomes.
Well, that makes me feel really good. I appreciate your time, Kevin. I'll get off here so someone else can take a call for you. But I listen to you all as much as I can, and I don't agree with about 2% of everything you say, but, that's America.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. That and that's the way it should be. If somebody agrees with 100% of what I say, I would probably get really worried. So it sounds like a great opportunity. I would continue to pursue it. Let's go to Arkansas. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Kevin, sir. First of all, I'd like to say thank you very much for what you've done for us out here. I've done everything that you've suggested. You have a 2008 Kenworth. I have a fast system on, OPS system on, MicBlue bearings in, Pittsburgh power manifold. But I was listening to one of your shows the other day, and you kind of like got under my skin a little bit and kind of irritated me a little bit. And I'm going to bring back some emphasis that, you know, you always say do the hard work. And I have one of these new engines, the 2008 Cummins with an ISX with the DPF on it, and I was having similar problems with not knowing what's going on. But every time the Cummins went into the shop, I sat into the Cummins class and with the techs and did the course that they did and got the literature from Ohio and stuff that Cummins sent me in and talked about the Dallas Tuck Show and stuff like that. And, you know, and these new engines are coming more and more, and the more we learn about them, the better it's going to be. And I'm wondering why you won't do the hard work and learn about them too.
Good question. A fair question. And it's not that I don't do the hard work. I've looked at, in fact, I could probably, even though I haven't done a lot of it hands-on, I could probably troubleshoot most of the problems better than the shops are today. And it's all in writing. It's all there. But the shops aren't doing it. And even when you do it, the cost of keeping those systems functioning properly is very expensive. A lot of that stuff just deteriorates over time, entire systems. And we have to go in and replace it to get it functioning the way it was supposed to again. And I suppose I'm sure I could do more to learn, but I have a fixed number of hours in a day, just like everybody else, and I have to prioritize. And I prioritize based on what I think I could do that would be most helpful to my market being single truck owner operators. My opinion is, and this comes from what I would do, and I say this all the time, I wouldn't buy one of these new trucks. I just wouldn't do it. So I don't want to go do the hard work to figure out how to buy one and operate one, because I've looked at all the data and my choice is, why would I go do that? I can build a glider and avoid all that. I can buy an older truck and recondition it and avoid all that. Why would I do this? It's not a productive use of my time.
Well, some people don't have some people have to have the new trucks. And some people, you know, like myself, I have a dedicated run to California and back. And, you know, I have to learn about it. And I had to do that because of my dedicated run, you know. So, I mean, but that's why I chose to do that. So the rate was so good, I couldn't turn it down. And, I mean, and there's more and more callers that are going to call in and have these problems with new trucks. And, I mean, I just wonder why.
Or not. I'm saying now you made a conscious decision because the rate was so good, you want to continue to go to California, so you've got to figure out these trucks. I've looked at it and said, wait a minute, there's a lot of other options. There's lots of great paying freight that doesn't go to California. My choice would be just not to go. Sure, I have lots of people who are going to go, and I'm sure those people would love for me to spend my time solving their problems. I get that. But I also get callers from people who pull hot shots. And they say, Kevin, you keep saying you don't understand these trucks. I don't. That's not my market. Well, why don't you go research it? Because I have to prioritize and pick my and then I have people and call and say, I work in the oil fields, Kevin. You don't understand oil fields. Why don't you do the hard work so you can help me in the oil fields? Or I pull specialized, and a lot of your advice helps, but you don't really understand this part of what I do. What, you see where I'm going with this?
You have to be ambidextrous and take a bit of every market and try and combine the lot. I understand. You just kind of like throw your hands up in the air. It seems like when a lot of callers call in, you just kind of like throw your hands in the air and say, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to tell you. And I kind of got that impression. I was kind of like, wow. I mean, this is a guy that I respect so much, and he's just throwing his hands in the air and saying, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to do. I mean, that's kind of hit me a little bit, you know. I mean, I have so much respect for you that you did that. I mean, that's kind of, you know.
Well, you are correct. That's exactly what I've done. I fought the battle. I went out there. I saw what it was going to take. I see the problems, and I had to make a decision. Do I devote enough time? And here's the thing. Part of my decision was I could devote hours and hours and hours traveling to shops, going through classes, trying to do this stuff hands-on. And there's a good chance I'm not going to come up with a solution that's going to help very many people. Or instead, I could do what I did today, which was I spent about 4.5 hours writing my book that I do know a lot about, fuel mileage, and that when it comes out will literally help tens of thousands of people.
I mean, I understand, but don't you feel that the market is going towards new trucks and not towards the older generation of trucks? Don't you think it's inevitable it's going to come? I mean, if you keep living in the past like that and keep going on, then you're going to get left behind in time. Is that not what you feel like?
No, not at all. Because here's the thing. Again, looking at all the information that I have available to me, right now I don't think building gliders is living in the past. I don't think reconditioning old trucks is living in the past. It's the best solution available to us today. Absolutely,
right.
Hands down, not even close. Now, I know all the new truck models. I know all the new engines. I know all the new transmissions. I'm staying up on those trucks. Here's what I think will happen. I think we can continue down the path we're on, building gliders, reconditioning old trucks, and staying out of California. We can continue on that path at least another 10 years. I don't see anything that's going to stop us from doing that. And then by that time, I think that they'll solve all these problems, just like they did with cars. I don't want to own an 04 through a 2014. Too many problems. Maybe next year somebody will solve something. I kind of doubt it. But I think within the next 10 years we might. So I still think I'm on the right path. I still think that I'm making the best use of my available time to be able to help the largest number of people.
Well, I thank you very much for your opinion, Mr. Kevin. So, and I still listen to you no matter what, I think so. Everyone's got a matter of opinion. But thank you very much for what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing, and I'll keep bugging you. So.
You're welcome. Thank you, by the way. And certainly, you know, if you think that, you know, if you have an opinion, I'd love to hear it. I do, and I'll take it into consideration, and I've certainly thought a lot about this issue. And I see the time that I spend trying to understand the new engines and how to fix them, and it's really just not very productive time on my part. It's similar to people who call me all the time and say, Kevin, you have so much influence in the industry. Why, instead of complaining about groups like OWIDA or opposing them, why don't you join, you know, maybe be on the board or join these organizations and make a difference? I am making a difference. I'm making a difference in my own way. I don't play well with others. I don't do well in big organizations. I just don't. I know my strengths and I know my weaknesses. And I also have to direct my own time. People say, well, why don't you go fight this law about EOBRs or whatever it might be? Because I've seen what it takes to try to make an impact in those areas. And that's not me. I like having a direct one-on-one impact with people that I can help. I could go lobby Congress for the next 20 years, and I may not accomplish anything. I can spend 4 hours today writing a book, and I know exactly what I'm going to accomplish when that book is done. When I got done writing today for 4 hours, I spent about 2 hours reading. I wasn't even reading about anything specific in trucking. I was reading some personal development stuff that also allows me to help other people. So I understand that because of the position I've been able to put myself in, the position where I can reach a lot of people and influence a lot of people, other people now want to say, well, you have all this power and influence. Why don't you use it to do this? One of the ways that I got to the point where I am today, that I have the influence and the reach that I have, is because I made the decisions to stay focused and do what I do best. And I'm sure I haven't made all the right decisions. I've made tons of mistakes. But most of the time when people, you know, ask me to expand and do more, my reaction is I'm here doing what I do and doing it well because I have stayed focused on what I know and what I do and what I'm good at. That doesn't mean we won't expand and get into other things, but we do it very carefully. Let's go to Indiana. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. What can I help you with today?
I got a 99-379 Peterbilt with a C12 in it, and I was looking to do a few things to get some fuel mileage, but I do I pull a frameless dump trailer and haul commodities to, like, dairy farms and different type of stuff like that, and corn and soybeans. And I don't know. I was thinking about doing the direct drive swap, but I wondered on what that would do with my reverse on having such a high rear end gear. And I also have tall rubber on it. I have 11R24.5, which I like the ground clearance on, but I know it cost me a little bit of fuel mileage, but I didn't know how much that would affect my final drive ratio, I guess, going with, like, what you said, a 274 or whatever.
Got it. Okay, so you are correct to be concerned about low and reverse. When we change our rear end ratios, we do have an effect. Most of the other gears don't matter much. But low and reverse, they do become a higher final gear now. And in a normal freight operation, van, flatbed, whatever it might be, we calculate this by what's called startability. Does the vehicle have the proper gearing to be able to get moving, forward or reverse? It's called startability. And in normal freight, startability with 264s and 279 gears are just fine. In specialized operations, we do have to think about that. I mean, if you're going to try to pull 130,000 pounds out of a steep dock, then that probably is not a good gear choice. In your case, I don't know the operation well enough. Are you really heavy trying to get started under really tough conditions? Certainly not a dock, but, you know, in soft ground or very uneven ground, you may find that's challenging.
Yeah, I'm pretty regional, you know, 250-mile radius of my house, and I do a little bit of off-road, but I'm always at least 75,000, sometimes up to 90, you know, depending on if I'm in Michigan or something like that. But I don't go, like, in fields hardly ever, but, you know, there is a lot of, oh, like some of the places you load at, you have to load on a scale, and then you pull up and back up as you're loading, and then you got to pull out and back up a hill and that kind of stuff. And I just was kind of concerned about that, I guess.
In your operation, being so regional where you're not out on the road, you know, 8 hours straight at cruise speed, I might consider a gear ratio like a 293, which would give me – and – if you can afford the ground clearance, because I'm not addressing ground clearance, I'm addressing driveline and gearing. If you match 293s with low-profile 22.5s, your startability increases quite a bit. And I don't think, based on what you've explained to me, that you would have any problem with startability then. Now, there's another issue, and that is gearing changes. When I prioritize fuel mileage improvements, gearing changes are way down at the bottom of the list because they're expensive and the break even and return on investment isn't all that quick. Now, it doesn't mean I don't do it. It just means I don't do it till I think it's time to do it, meaning I've done all the other things that are less expensive and have a faster break even first. And then if I get to that point, go, okay, well, you know, I've got my fuel mileage up to X and I've done all these things and I still want more. Then
yeah.
we look at things like gearing changes. And then even farther down the line is, you know, converting a 6x4 to a 6x2. So just because I talk about certain things doesn't mean everybody should go out and do them.
Yeah. Well, I run all synthetic, with, you know, oils, and I've had the ECM, had a, you know, custom tune or whatever you want, and then a different turbo. And all that stuff has helped out substantially, but obviously I'm pushing a brick through the air, which I understand, but I don't know if I'd want to switch trucks. I really like this truck, and it's easy to work on, easy to get parts for. So
yeah,
I don't know.
And those things matter, but if you were to sit down and make a list of all the fuel mileage improvements you can do and then go through those one at a time and start doing them, I have a feeling you'll keep this truck. Other than the aerodynamics, it's good specs for the job you're doing, and there's still room for improvement, and you may even make that gearing change. I just wouldn't. That's probably not the next step. I think you can find things in that list that are going to work out better for you. Let's go to Missouri. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Doing
Merry
good.
Christmas
what can I help you?
You?
Merry Christmas.
Okay. I remember when we were doing the podcast ad before on the Audio Road, and I tried going back to that and trying to find your recent your podcast where I could hear them over again and that. And I'm having a hard time finding them on the web. Can you, tell me where they go or?
There's a couple different ways to do it now, and we're actually testing out different platforms. So once I record the podcast, we're looking at different ways of making it available. Obviously available on Blog Talk Radio directly, but there's no really good way to listen to it from there on your phone. And a lot of people obviously want to listen on their phone. The easiest way to listen on your phone, do you have an iTunes account?
Yes.
You can search for the podcast in iTunes, and they automatically get posted there every week.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So
if
you subscribe to it in iTunes, then every time we post one, it's just going to download to your device and be sitting there waiting for you. Now, we're also posting on Stitcher, which has a nice phone app, so you could go to Stitcher.com and find their app and try that one. We post every week on SoundCloud, which is actually probably my favorite app right now. Stitcher's not bad. SoundCloud's pretty good. We're looking at a couple others. So our goal is to make it as easy as possible for everybody. But those are probably the three easiest ways right now on a phone: iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud.
Okay. All right. I'll check that out and appreciate it. And I enjoy listening to the podcast because that way I listen to it as many times as I want. You know,
every time I listen to them, when you want.
Yeah. Every time I listen to them, I learn more. I find
excellent.
Stuff, did I hear that? You know, and
yeah, right.
So I want to keep going back, you know. Okay, appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks. That goes for anybody. You know, we did a lot of podcasting back in 2010. We were doing 3 hours a week most weeks. And then our schedule just got out of control and we couldn't keep it up. But all of those podcasts are still there. So if you go to iTunes and subscribe, you'll have access to all of those podcasts that we did back in 2010. We did them almost an entire year. So there's a lot of good material there. And now we're trying to free up our schedule to do more of this. Right now we're committing to doing 1 hour a week. And as soon as I feel comfortable with that, we'll try to add another hour. I'm going to try to develop some new shows, maybe even with different hosts. So, we've got some ideas for other shows that we're going to work on as well. Let's go to Oregon this time. Rebecca, welcome to the program.
Merry Christmas, Kevin.
Merry Christmas. What's on your mind today?
Well, listen, I hadn't checked in with you for a while, and I just wanted to check in and let you know that we're doing super, super, super well on our savings goal. And we've been trolling truck paper, and we're seeing that we could get in right now, but we're still saving, and we've got some more work that we want to do with getting the right carrier and all that. But, you know, I've just been listening, and the other day when you were talking about that guy with the lease purchase, and we were stuck in Montana trying to get home for Christmas, and when I heard how much his truck payments were, I thought, gosh, can he even go home for Christmas? So it's hard sitting there watching money pile up, you know, and it's hard putting off everything, you know, that you put off
to get
the money to pile up. But you know what? I just feel so good about it. I just know we're going to be successful because of everything that we've learned from you and from the CMC. And so we just wanted to check in and let you know how we were doing with that. And if Jackie's listening, I just want to let her know we will be getting in touch with you, because she said, I'll help you figure out how to get that truck and not lose a lot of work on another carrier.
Excellent.
We're just doing our work. And you know, Kevin, that little drummer boy you were talking about?
Yes.
You know your favorite song there? Well, don't you think that if we got him to do some goal setting and be responsible and do some hard work, that maybe he would have a gift that he could give the king?
That's right.
It's interesting when
you were telling me what was going on, as I was listening, my question was going to be, that has to feel great doing it this way, seeing the money there and looking at it and going, you know what, if we really wanted to, we could pull the trigger right now. But
We're
going to wait, we're going to prepare. And then before I even got a chance to ask the question, you told me, it does feel great.
Oh, yeah. And being at the point where now what's important is getting the carrier and getting the business set up exactly how we want, having that be starting to get a little bit more pressing than the money, oh, my gosh.
Yes.
That feels really, really, really good. And I'm always learning. And a lot of times Seth is asleep, and he'll wake up, and I'll go, Seth, guess what I just learned? I just learned you can get schematics for your truck. And when you have those electrical problems, you can look at the schematics. You don't have to pay a bunch of money to get somebody to put a part on.
Right.
So, anyway, well, Merry Christmas. And I also wanted to let you know that I'm very, very, very close on a personal goal that I think will help a lot of people. And so when I get that ready, can I call and let you know? Because I think it'll help a lot of truck drivers.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear it.
All right. Well, it's close. It's my partners that I'm kind of waiting on, and I know you know what that's like when you're working with other folks. Sometimes it takes a while to get the right folks to do that other piece. So I'll get off the line and let somebody else get on. But you all have a great, great holiday, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Well, thank you for the feedback and the report. I appreciate it. Congratulations on doing the hard work. And, you know, when you can look at this from the outside and look at the callers that I get that call me and they're struggling so bad in a lease purchase, they're making 20 cents a mile, they can't modify the truck, the truck's not running right, they can't go to another carrier, they're stuck. And they have 3 or 4 or 5 more years of that and then a balloon payment before they'll ever truly be able to make their own decisions. Or you look at what Rebecca and Seth are doing here, saving the money, doing the hard work, and already they're getting close to the point where they can pull the trigger on their own plan. It is such a much better way to go. Let's go to Texas. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing this afternoon?
Good. What can I help you with?
I got a quick, just random question about air. I have my secondary has been doing some really weird stuff. My primary air has been just fine, but my secondary air has been jumping all over the place. I have both of my leveling valves on the suspension and the frame replaced, and I don't lose a lot of air on my primary, but my secondary is just getting out of control.
So what's happening is you lose pressure quickly on the secondary, and then it has to continue, the compressor has to continue to cycle and rebuild.
Right, right. Well, it just random weird stuff, like one day I'll pull in someplace and be on a flat ground, get out, and I can hear air coming out somewhere underneath the fifth wheel, like near the leveling valve, and just shooting air out and watching the gauge drop. And then some days I'll get out, same weight, next day, different city, get out and hear nothing and watch the gauge drop. It just,
yeah, so what you've got is an intermittent leak, either caused by a valve that sticks, and it won't do it all the time, or
right.
You've got a line that is potentially moving, and when it's in one position, it'll leak. When it moves to another position, it won't. So even though, whether it's primary or secondary, it doesn't matter. What matters is you just have to find that leak. So what
right.
you've got to be able to do is when you've got time, you've got to get it to leak and then get under there and, you know, use the same things we always use, a spray bottle of soapy
right.
water or, you
yeah,
know, there.
I'm taking it over to the shop. I question for you, though, if you can give me your guy's number again over in Orlando, that action.
Yes, I can. As a matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll put you on hold. I don't like giving out numbers on the live part of this. Lisa can give you the number, because if I screw up a number, then people start calling the wrong places and we get hate mail. So I'll have Lisa pick back up and give you that number over to action. Let's go to Ohio. James, welcome to the program.
Oh, Kevin, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You were talking earlier about the impact you have on people's lives, and I'm one of those people. When I found your show, I was already on track with my plan, but you have sped my plan up and helped me so much to be more profitable, understanding more about how to be profitable. So today, I'm sitting here driving a 2007 379 with an A-cert. I got 1,000,000 miles on it. I have a contract for a feed company where I'm about 150,000 miles a year, making $1.74 a mile. I don't have time to take care of my truck. It's starting to take up more and more of my time. So I'm struggling looking at the numbers for going with a glider, because obviously Fitzgerald is probably the place I would end up going. I like not having a truck payment.
Yeah.
I also know that if I start spending money on this truck, I really can't stop, and when I'm done, I still have an A-cert.
Exactly. And we could look at a couple things here that might, if you have the numbers available, might make the decision a little easier. What is the average fuel mileage on this truck right now?
On my truck right now, I'm doing 6.2. It's costing me about 65 cents a mile.
Okay. So
now I run it. Let me say this. I run a pneumatic operation. So 10% of my fuel, thanks to the scan gauge, I know what that number is. 10% of my fuel is spent unloading. So I run 690 miles. I run 690 miles on two rounds. I run on one tank so I can keep track of my fuel mods close. And it takes me 120 to 130 gallons to run that. But 12 gallons of that is unloaded. So I'm actually doing better than that 6.2.
Right,
so,
right, which is understandable. So I'm going to say that, though, we could easily, with the new glider, built right, spec'd right, some modifications, we could easily turn that 6.2 into 7.2. Same operation.
Which is what?
And maybe even better, but let's call it 7.2.
That's $13,000 a year.
Yeah. Do you happen to know what your maintenance costs are per mile?
On this truck, they're running the 11th of the mile. But this year, the number's a little skewed because I did do the microbrew beers on it.
Okay.
And that was a little bit of a chunk of money to spend, but, you know, it helps. So.
Yeah, I'm going to say that even if we were to say your real number should be 9 or 10 cents instead of 11, that we could probably reduce that down to 7 or 8 with the new glider. Maybe even lower in the first couple years on a new glider. So I think that the truck payment itself is mostly going to be offset by fuel and maintenance savings. Maybe not entirely. But then we can throw in the other big factor, which is just as important, which is your time. Your time's valuable.
Which is important to my wife, which
exactly.
I feel guilt. You know, I don't have a garage. I don't have a shed. I work on the ground, and I'm out there, and, you know, if it's got to have work done on, doesn't matter if there's snow on the ground or if it's raining.
Right, right.
And it's time I can't spend with her, and she still likes spending time with me, so.
and that's important. And it's in fact, it's more important than just the money alone. So if you had to do this, let's say you were just getting started and you had to go out and work on this truck and there was no choice. That's what it took to make the business successful. Then I'd say, well, you got to do it. And you and your wife, maybe she learns how to lay on the ground and hand you wrenches so you can be together. But that's not the case. I don't think financially you have to do this. I think from the sounds of it anyway, that based on your operation and your financial position, you could afford the glider, and most of the cost will be offset by fuel and maintenance savings, and then the time you get back is critically important. So I think there's a glider in your future.
Well, I do too. It's, you know, I just got to bite and just decide to do it.
And it's not easy. And I know that.
I know
it's
not.
I was the same way. I would get to a point where trucks were paid off and I would think, there is no way I want to go buy another new truck and go through all that again. And it's not always the right move. But I used to try to do what I just did with you, use the numbers and some logic and look at all the factors. And I, you know, you've probably heard me tell many people the opposite. No, you shouldn't go out and buy another truck. You can't afford it. It's not a good decision. You know, you got to make do with what you've got. I don't think you're in that position, though.
Well, I know I can afford it. You know, I've spent the last 5 months trying to convince myself I couldn't. Well, you know, you just don't want to do it, you know. You know, it's not that I dislike the truck I have, but, you know, I go into a 386. I'm not pushing that brick, like they say, down the road anymore. You know, I got my 12.7. I'm probably going to be at the top of the fuel mileage chart because, I mean, you know, I understand more about how to do that today. You know, I could be sitting there doing 8, running up and down the road, cut out my 10%, and like you say, I'm still at 7.3, 7.4. It sounds like a good number to me.
Exactly. Yeah, and then you look at all the other benefits. The truck will be more reliable. You won't be as stressed about breakdowns or missing a load. You're going to have the comfort and safety of a newer truck, and all those things are good. It doesn't mean everybody should run out and buy one, but I've told most people, if the finances are available, the glider is the way to go. It really is the best of both worlds.
So what's going on with your signature gliders? Are you guys making them yet?
You know, I haven't talked about this yet, only because we have been through so many ups and downs on this project. I can't count how many times I came on the air and said, we got it. We solved the problem. Peterbilt's going to build the drivetrain the way we want it. And 2 weeks later, they changed their mind. And then we went to Kenworth. And then we went back to Peterbilt. Then we went to Kenworth. And then we had to change the way we were going to build it. And then we had another dealer who was going to build it. And on and on and on. And then we got to a point where the price was just it just wasn't going to work cost-wise. There is a new development right now. And the development is that Bruce Mallinson and I decided to build this truck together. Originally, we were going to let Custom Truck in Coos Bay, Oregon, build the first one and then develop the kit from that. Bruce stepped up and Pittsburgh Power stepped up and said, look, we'll make this happen. We'll build it. We'll get it done. And when it's all done, we can all sit down and evaluate the numbers and see if this is viable going forward or not. But we are in the process right now of building that first one. We already have customers for it. They've been patiently waiting for months now. I'm going to have to say a year here pretty soon.
Is it a Kenworth or is
it? It is a Kenworth, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
so
I don't have to do anything today, but, you know, I may just wait some more. I mean, I can keep – I got good numbers on my oil samples.
Yeah, here's our goal. I mean, I am really, really hoping that we have this truck at the Louisville Truck Show to show. Now, that's a push because it hasn't even gone to production yet. We're still waiting on one final decision from Kenworth on the build sheet. And once the truck actually goes to production and we get a delivery date, or the kit, I mean, when the kit goes to production and we get a delivery date, we'll be able to realistically look at it and say, okay, can we finish this by the Louisville Truck Show? But that's what we're hoping for.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you get to the other callers. I know all of us are important. You know, everybody that calls in, you know, has an impact on me. So, and I thank you for taking my call. I might have to bug you again later here.
Sure.
Maybe Louisville's not that far away. I might have to show up down there.
Yeah, it's really not. I mean, that's why we're getting a little worried, because we don't have a production date yet, and Louisville's 3 months away. It's the end of March, so we have like 90 days to build this thing. And we're hoping we can. We just don't know if we're going to be able to pull it off or not. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Josh, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you tonight?
Wonderful. What can I help you with?
Awesome. The question I had is, I had a couple trucks, and I was just kind of messing around with, I have a 99 FLD120, and I put 264 gear ratios in it, and I had them all microblued, and also with the transmission at 13-speed, and I put all microblue bearings on everywhere else, and I was planning on running this truck in about 11th gear, because I was told, you know, that's a direct drive, I get more power. But I'm still, we haul potatoes, so we kind of haul heavy, and sometimes we're empty. But we're only getting about 6.5 with this truck, but it's only a 500 Detroit. What do you think I need to get more power out of this thing to get more fuel mileage? Or
no, I mean, sometimes power helps. 500 certainly isn't lacking. I mean, if you told me it was a 370, we'd certainly want to turn it up. If you told me it was a 430, we'd want to turn it up. At 500, I mean, we can turn it up, or we could put a power box on it. I don't know that that's going to help much. What else have you done to the truck for fuel mileage? I know you did all the microblue, which is great. What else have you done?
Yeah, I guess I kind of did it backwards to what you say, you know, because I did that transmission, microblued all that, and then the 264 gears, and microblued that, you know, I put them gears in. But other than that, I really haven't done anything to the truck.
Yeah, see, I would go hit the low-hanging fruit now. Go get the easy stuff. Do you have a scan gauge yet?
Yeah, we have a scan gauge, yep.
Okay, good. Mufflers, fleet air filters, air tabs, synthetic oil, FAS. There's so many other things you could do that will probably add a mile to a mile and a half per gallon combined. Now, how long have you had the truck?
About 2 years.
Okay. Are we sure the overhead's set right? Charger cooler's not leaking? Have we done oil samples, those kind of things?
We haven't done any oil samples to it. I have took it to, we do a lot of stuff ourselves, but I have took it to a shop, and they did, just about a month ago, they did a, you know, they just went over the top adjusted all the injectors and all that stuff, but and put a new charge air cooler on it also.
Okay. All right. So I would say get an oil sample. That'll give us a good idea of what's going on in the engine. If the engine's not functioning properly, then a lot of times that will hide the effects of our fuel mileage improvements. I've seen trucks where people keep adding and trying things and nothing's really working the way we expect it to. And then we find out there's a mechanical problem with the engine. One of the quickest ways to figure that out is with an oil sample. I mean, if we get good oil samples back, there's a pretty good chance that the engine's functioning well. If we get an oil sample back and it's got fuel dilution, we know we've got a problem. If it's got high soot, we know we've got a problem. So I would start with that. Then I would go do, like I say, hit the low-hanging fruit, the easy stuff, and we should be able to get this truck, from 6.2 well up into the sevens pretty quickly. Let's go to California. Dale Howard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I got a couple of points. The gentleman that's having the air leak problem, if he signs up for the CMC, when you open that up, we give away a schematic of the air system. But the secondary side is the steer axle brakes, all of the suspension, and any air-operated components on the tractor as well as the trailer. So that'll give them lots of places to look for it.
Oh, yeah, and that would help out tremendously. Just knowing where to look, since we know it's the secondary, would cut down the time quite a bit.
Yeah. And the caller that suggested you need to spend a little more time on the newer technology to accustom yourself, I was the proud owner of one of the pre-production engines, and I was fortunate enough on the new technology to have two Cummins engineers' cell phones. And quite honestly, Cummins themselves haven't figured out all that's going on inside their engine. The last major issue I had was, I want to say it's the 3176 code, and when I phoned my helpful little engineer, the phone got quiet, and he says, oh, that's not the good code. So he tapped away, and he says, oh, you're still under warranty, good. He says, this one's about 8 hours to troubleshoot. Well, 3 days and $19,000 later, they just kept throwing parts at it until the throw cash at the dealer light went out.
Wow.
And, you know, if I was writing the check for that, that would have put me out of business.
Yeah. Yeah. I want people to understand what you just said. You didn't have phone numbers for two mechanics. You didn't have phone numbers for two technicians. You didn't have phone numbers for two service managers. You had phone numbers for engineers, the people who designed and built this engine.
Yeah, this was the top of the good idea folks food chain. And, they were, on most things, they were very helpful. But on that one particular code, and I know my home dealer worked with these guys, off and on to try and solve this. And like I say, it 19 grand later, it the light went away and out the door I went. But
so,
a friend of a friend had an I believe it was an 09, and he wanted, he was scared of the air police coming and putting him in jail if he fixed the truck. So he spent $23,000 of his own money in various stages trying to get the throw cash at the dealer light to go out.
Oh.
And finally Cummins dealer basically said, you know what, just don't bring the truck back here. We don't know. So that's when the little light went on, and he found a shop that would fix his problems, and they fixed his problems, and, life is great again.
Yeah.
But this new technology is not the be-all and end-all.
If the people who designed and built the truck haven't figured out exactly how to troubleshoot it yet. And this is what they do. This is their life, day in and day out, probably has been for years. This is probably all they work on. And they can't figure it out. Those are the reasons that I finally said, just not worth my time. If somebody said to me, Kevin, here's the thing. There's a lot to learn about these new trucks, and it's going to take you 200 hours of study time. But if you do it, if you put in the 200 hours, you'll know these trucks and you'll be able to help people fix them. You know what? If that were the case, I would find the 200 hours. That might take me a while. I might only commit 4 hours a week, and it might take me a year or whatever. I would find the time. But that's not the case. Nobody can tell me that if I study long and hard enough, I'll figure this out. In fact, all the evidence tells me, no matter how long and how hard I study, I'm not going to be the guy to figure this out.
No, and you're absolutely right. I mean, these guys, you know, the urea engines are their project. And don't get me wrong, these guys are very knowledgeable and great guys.
Absolutely.
But, you know, there's some fault codes that just pop up that, you know, they concede we'll just throw things at it and hope something sticks.
Here's part of the problem. Part of the problem in the way I see it is the engine, the designs are flawed to start with. These are not the solutions that we're going to have 10 years from now. The solution isn't figuring out how to fix these. I don't think they can be fixed after a while. I think the solution is we have to design better trucks in the beginning, and I think they'll get there. We're not there yet, so this just isn't worth my time because it won't accomplish anything.
Well, and, you know, I listened to, you know, you talk about that lease purchase and Cranston. You know, just imagine if you're in one of these lease purchase deals and 4 years into this, you're out of warranty and you get the good old 3176 fault code pops up. How are you going to deal with that?
Yeah, where are you going to come up with the $23,000 to fix it when you've only been making 20 cents a mile?
Yeah. And that's, I think people picture when they get into these lease purchase things that, you know, yeah, it looks good, but, you know, 4 and 5 years down the road when you're getting close to a payout, you know, that is devastating.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. I understand the caller. It was a legitimate question. You know, I always say do the hard work. Well, why don't I do the hard work and figure this out? I've tried very hard, and I can see now that it's not going to work. So instead, I have focused my time on helping people avoid the problem in the first place, because once they're in it, I can't fix it. And I'm as frustrated as everybody else. So I spend more time saying, okay, here's how to avoid it. Build a glider, recondition an older truck, stay out of California. Whatever you have to do not to own one of these trucks is what I would do. Now, if you're in a position and you end up with one of these trucks, I wish I could help you, but most of the time I just can't.
Yeah, and, you know, California, you know, they've folded on everything so far. You know, I'm not so sure that they're done, you know, waving the white flag. And
well, and there are a couple pretty big lawsuits.
Yeah.
You know, the California Trucking Association is suing them. OWIDA is suing them. We don't know what's going to happen. They're giving all kinds of new exemptions, good faith exemptions for 6 months. Just tell them you're trying to get another truck is all they're saying. Just tell us you're attempting to comply and we'll probably let you run in the state. So they are backing down quite a bit already.
So, yeah, I'm not sure to do it all again. If you put a gun to my head, I would do that.
So actually, next Wednesday is the first, right?
Yes.
How many non-compliant trucks do you think are going to be in California next Wednesday?
just as many as there are today. And it's
exactly.
That's the beauty of this. And I have always said, do not look like a wounded gazelle, and law enforcement will leave you alone. Nobody's going to come and eat you. CARB has X amount of inspectors. They're bankrupt. The California Highway Patrol has X amount of officers. When they do these blitzes, they have to send a highway patrolman around. So, you know, I just don't see really aggressive enforcement. They just can't afford to do it.
No.
Regions of the state are even suing them and lobbying Governor Brown to tell these guys to have a reality check. So, yeah, California is by no means etched in stone that you can't come here anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, great stuff as always. We're running out of time, and I've got to get to some calls here. Let's go to Michigan. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. On the subject of rebuilding older trucks, how do you go about protecting yourself with, an extremely large investment of, rebuilding it? You know, a good used older truck.
Because, you mean as far as insurance goes?
As far as insurance goes, because as you know, insurance only covers, market value.
Most companies, and I shouldn't say most companies, some companies, and you have to go look for them, some companies offer what is called a stated value policy. And it's more expensive, there's no question. For a while, we were actually looking to partner with one of those insurance companies, bring them on the show as a sponsor. And I kind of backed out because for a lot of reasons. I mean, and we may do it again. I don't know. We're pretty particular about who we deal with, and insurance companies really don't fit into our business model all that well. But when I was doing that, I found companies, several, that would allow you to state the value of the vehicle. Some of them would simply take your word for it, and you would pay for that amount of coverage, and they would cover your vehicle for that amount. Others wanted you to show proof of why the vehicle was worth that much. But you could certainly do that because we would have all the invoices. So it is possible to cover a vehicle like that. It's no different than people who own classic cars. Really modified cars. You can get insurance to cover anything. You just have to pay for it.
Right.
And honestly, I looked at the rates. It wasn't that expensive.
Okay. Because I've checked around a few places, and nobody that I checked with offered it.
Keep calling.
I really need to because I'm on the far end of kind of on the extreme side of what I've done to this truck. Not even done yet, but, the first 12 months I've owned it, I've put $70,000 into it.
And that's kind of the number we were throwing around. We were throwing around when we were working on that project, we were throwing around a $75,000 budget, and you can blow through that pretty quick.
Not hard.
Reconditioning an older truck, I get that. I know it. But when you look at the numbers, I'd still much rather spend $75,000 on an old truck that I get to recondition the way I want it, some custom work on the interior, that kind of stuff. I mean, that was exciting to me. I don't happen to have the insurance companies right in front of me. It was several years ago I was working on that. But we did know that that was an issue, and I went out and did some research. We found a couple companies, and it exists. It's out there. It's a stated value policy that allows you to set the value you want to cover the truck for. You pay that amount every month, and you've got coverage. So it can be done. Maybe I'll take that project up again and, at least have some names available, not necessarily insurance companies that we endorse. It's tough for me to endorse an insurance company because it's hard for me to know what they're going to do when a claim happens. So that was part of the problem I ran into. I couldn't get enough good information that I felt comfortable saying this is insurance company that I recommend. Maybe we'll go back and consider that again. But I, like I say, we're pretty picky about who we partner with. Well, that's going to do it. I am all out of time. I want to thank everybody for joining me. We'll see you back here tonight for the live show. Tomorrow afternoon, same time, same phone number. You'll be able to dial in, and we'll be recording 2 hours of Sirius XM programming. So I'll obviously, if you're listening, you're probably on our notification list, either Facebook or text message. I'll send those notifications out tomorrow. But if you just want to mark it down, same time tomorrow, same phone number, we'll see you here then. Thanks, everybody, and good night. Be safe, be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford.